Lucas Oil Stadium in downtown Indianapolis, a hive of activity on this Saturday as the 2018 NFL Scouting Combine continues. And across the street from the Indiana Convention Center, we welcome you in for our final Jaguars.com Live of this Combine. J.P. Shadrick, John Osier. And it's interesting, John, with the guests we've had on this week, the national perspective of a Jaguars team that was a winning team for the first time in a long, long time. Mm-hmm. The narrative has changed a bit for this Jaguars franchise moving ahead. The leadership's in place. The defense is there for a while. They've got the quarterback for three more years. And there's a feeling that the Jags team's here to stay for a bit.
Yeah, and it's been interesting. We had Shireen Williams from Pro Football Talk on, and she said something interesting on the lines of very matter-of-factly just kind of said the Jaguars will be one of those teams contending for the Super Bowl. Didn't really say with any hyperbole. It didn't feel like the last 4 or 5 years from 13 to 16 where we had off-season hype and everybody's writing in exclamation points about the Jags, and then you had sort of the, that doesn't mean anything for next season. You still got it, as Doug Marone said, you still got to go earn it. But there is a perception, I think correctly so, that the foundation is built, and because of the youth, because of the feeling that this was a young defense,
yep.
Yes, they maxed out in terms of the number of games they all played. I don't think you're going to see them go through the whole season with only two games missed because of injuries. But you do get the feeling that people think, well, that might not happen, but there's other things that can make up for it. They're still an ascending team. It feels like the offense can only get better from where it was. It feels like the offense was at a starting point that only should rise. So, yeah, there's some excitement about it. And I think the other thing, JP, we've talked about, mm-hmm. has a chance to be a team that I think people can start sort of identifying with and liking. And Shireen said the same thing, that as we all know, everybody in the country was a huge Jaguars fan on the day of the AFC Championship game against one fan base.
That's
and that was
right.
New England Patriots
yes.
fan base. And you do sort of wonder, I get ozone emails all the time from people who are kind enough to sort of share their story of when they became Jags fans. And you'll often hear them saying, I became a Jags fan. I was watching them on a Monday night in 1997. And even though they lost, I fell in love with that team. They probably won that game I'm talking about. But you know what I'm saying? There's certain games that all of a sudden people start identifying with.
There's a moment in time or a personality or something happens.
And you've got to think that a lot of people watched that 45-42 win and saw Blake Bortles bring back in the second half, mm-hmm. saw Jalen Ramsey making plays, saw the Miles Jack interception. I'm sure a lot of people saw the Miles Jack fumble recovery that didn't happen or that did happen, but the touchdown taken away. I'll bet in 5 or 6 years we're getting people coming up to us and saying, hey, I started loving you guys. Not us, JP. Nobody likes us.
No,
but
no.
I started loving that team in that 2017 run after the after a great regular season, and I started really connecting with some of the personalities on that team. I think, again, Jalen Ramsey, Miles Jack, these are likable guys. I think it's going to be a popular team moving forward.
No doubt about that. This is social media, Jaguars.com Live. So we're on Facebook today, and you can comment below, and we'll answer your questions live here coming up in just a little bit. You want to get some ozone questions in?
Do I,
do
JP?
Do you?
It's a hive of activity, I've been told, around here. So.
It is.
That's right.
And certainly is every day in the ozone.
It certainly is.
Let's start off today with Chris from Mandarin. Do you expect a drop-off from the defense next season? The unit's health was uncommonly good. However, all else being equal, do you think they can match the level of last season?
Well, again, exactly what I just said. Yeah. I think that it's going to be hard for the team to have a health season like they had last year. You had Telvin Smith missed two games. Beyond that, remarkably healthy. And then in the postseason, it kind of caught up with them a little bit. You had Tashaun Gibson down. He played the AFC Championship game, was clearly not himself. And then you had some injuries at the end. Marcell Dareus and Miles Jack out. Even Calais and Unique.
That's right. They weren't
even
right.
Plays through the thing. So yep. You saw what can happen. There's a little bit of a drop-off there. Still wasn't a bad defensive day, but you know what I'm saying? There can be a drop-off. So I would expect them to have to go through your normal one guy lost for the season. I don't know who it is. A-Rod was lost this year. You usually have that. And have a couple guys go down. At the same time, I think what's encouraging and what you have to think from the big picture, most teams have to deal with that. So you build your roster, you build your defense so that you can make up for it. Well, getting Aaron Colvin back, which I think they're going to do, would be able to counter maybe one or two games missed in the secondary somewhere. So you're still strong there. Miles Jack is a guy to me who is an impact player who can be an above the X's and O's guy, can be a core guy, who I think has a chance to be, if he was a 6 this year, has a chance to be a 9 next year, chance to be an all-pro guy. So he raises his level of play, and all of a sudden, the fact that you've lost a couple of guys, you've got Miles Jack playing now like a Luke Kuechly-type player, mm-hmm. which I think he's capable of reaching that level. Unique Ngakoue keeps ascending. You've got Marcel Darius for a year. You've got Jalen Ramsey, who's only going to get better. You've got a secondary, JP, who I thought in the second half of the season had a lot of mental breaks, a lot of plays that went against them for huge plays. Yeah. I don't think you'll see as many of those next year now that they're playing together. So some factors that went against them to where they had some flaws I think can improve to counteract some of the injuries that are inevitably going to happen because you can't get that lucky 2 years in a row.
Early in last season, this was a defense great with the pass rush. They had the 2 10-sack games, of course, one on opening day against Houston. But they had struggles against the run, mm-hmm. and they fixed that when Darius got here. It kind of clogged up the middle a little bit. With him, I think, on this team early in the season, they sure. should be good against the run from day one next year.
Yeah, they should be, and it's you're probably, I think, going to lose Paz. You know, I would be surprised if Paul Posluszny's back, especially, again, I haven't heard this, but from looking at it, you would think if they get Colvin back, then you're talking about they're considering Colvin cap-wise a starter in that sense, and it would seem like you would have to give something up, and you perhaps give up the idea of having Paz back even on the lowest level, and you go with a Blair Brown who would be certainly more less expensive than Paz would be. But even with him out, I think the Darius factor and the fact that this defensive line was already very good against the run, I think they'll be better against the run. I don't know that they'll ever be as good against the run as they are rushing the passer because they're committed to the style of play that they used last mm-hmm. year. But I think it, if you get a full season out of Darius, you can't help but be better up front, mainly because I think we saw a few glimpses late last year that this guy belonged at the top of the draft when he was – he's a special guy, impact guy, that should probably be mentioned more often in the Jalen Ramsey, Miles Jack in terms of athletic ability. He's that guy, and it's often easy to overlook him because he was traded. Mm-hmm. But if you're talking about pure athletic ability and the ability to change games, he deserves to be in that upper echelon group when we talk about this team. He was a difference maker.
Yeah, there's a point where it's tough to block him sometimes up front. Your social media questions coming up, so comment on Facebook, and we'll get to those coming up in just a little bit. We'll continue with the ozone questions, though. We'll go to Boston, Massachusetts. Joel has a question. Big John, particularly around this time, there's talk about how different the offensive approaches are between college and pro and how linemen, receivers, and quarterbacks need to make adjustments. It got him wondering, to what extent do those differences affect defensive players in their transition to the pro game?
Yeah, I think not nearly as much. To me, defense is read, react, go play, out athletic. Now, there are obviously exceptions to that. You have to know how to cover. As a pass rusher, as Unique Ngakoue can tell you, there's techniques involved that you have to develop that you can't just come in and out-athlete a guy at those spots. But in terms of the difference of the game and the time that it takes to adapt, offensive football, and I think it was somebody we had on this week, mm-hmm. Greg Cosell, mm-hmm. made the point that they are really different games. And the more you talk to people who study both, the bigger separations become on offense. With the advent of the spread offense in college, you're seeing teams use RPO, read pass option in the NFL. You're seeing teams take elements of that. But I don't know with the speed of defenses in the NFL if you're ever going to be able to go over all the way to the Big 12 style of offense in this league because there's just too many athletes at too many spots to do it. So I think they're going to continue getting more and more different offensively and defensively. I mean, offense in college is going to continue to separate, and I think it's going to be harder and harder for people to evaluate quarterbacks, for people to evaluate offensive linemen, particularly offensive tackles, because they just don't play the same style as they do in the NFL. It's truly, and you've seen me write it a lot, JP, it is truly on some level completely different sports that happen to wear the same equipment.
Let's get to some social questions now.
You gonna make it?
If I can get to them, we'll see if I can breathe and talk at the same time.
Well, if you can't, we'll just push you aside and move
forward. Here's my computer. Right. Antonio Judge McDomick asking, is there an Allen Robinson-like player in this year's draft?
Well, you know, there's certainly guys with size.
Cortland Sutton's a big
Cortland
guy.
Cortland Sutton makes sense.
SMU.
I spoke with Rob Rang this morning from NFL Draft Scout in a piece that will be on Jaguars.com later. There are guys in this draft, if you're looking for the big receiver, and I'm not trying to avoid the question, but it sort of fits. Tight end, if you consider Allen Robinson a big target guy, if that's his role, then there are tight ends. There are big tight ends that give you that middle of the field, that safety valve thing, and that's not giving Allen Robinson his due. He's more than that.
Yeah.
But, yes, there are physical people who can catch the ball at the end of this draft. I don't think realistically you're going to get a player at number 29, which is where if A-Rob leaves, I think they're going to wind up having to get some sort of either tight end or wide receiver at that spot. I don't think you're going to get a player at 29 who really replaces what A-Rob is doing. Because think about it, JP. We watched training camp this year.
Mm-hmm.
Allen Robinson against a very good secondary was able to compete, able to make plays against that bunch that went beyond physical ability. He's at a mental part of the game in his career where he knows what he has to get out of training camp. He's a professional player now as opposed to a rookie. Those are all things that are going to take time for any rookie to develop to get to that point where they can reach the level of consistency that I think A-Rob would have brought this past season. But you can get a body type that can give you some things that he gave you, but I don't think you're going to get a guy who's going to replace what he would bring, which begs the question, why don't you bring him back? Well, it's all about money. So
that's right.
We get that you can't actually replace that. You have to go replace its impact in other spots and hope that you get collectively more than he would have brought.
Back to Facebook today. You can comment below this video here on the Jaguars Facebook page. Richie Green, Trey Burton, or Jimmy Graham ain't much F-A-T-E's. Free agent tight ends.
Oh, F-A-T-E's. Fates.
Yeah.
Fate. would you rather have Graham, his career on a pure impact, what he might be able to bring you for a month period? Perhaps. But my thought is that Jimmy Graham would be very, very expensive in free agency, might take $9-10 million, a huge chunk of that cap, whereas, and he's closer to the end of his career than a Trey Burton would be. Trey Burton, Pete Prisco said a couple minutes ago on our Jaguars.com Live, makes some sense because he's a young ascending player. He's that 26, 27-year-old age range that perhaps like a Delanie Walker when he went to Tennessee, and I'm stealing an Ozone Reader's thunder on that. He pointed out a few weeks ago that Delanie Walker might be, you know, Trey Burton might be Delanie Walker type, who was sort of behind the starter in San Francisco and then comes in, has his best years with you. That may be what Trey Burton is. The only issue there would be I'm not the only one saying that that may be what Trey Burton is. The entire league sort of knows that may be what Trey Burton is. What often happens then is the price goes way, way up. It might get out of the range the Jaguars want to pay for that. But I think they're, you know, from what Dave Caldwell said on Wednesday, they're going to be active on at least one front on the offensive side of the ball that we're not kicking around yet, you and I, JP, that we're not talking about sort of out there. I would guess that would either be guard or tight end because there's really not a receiver out there. So if they're going to make a splash, Trey Burton would be a guy that makes sense.
One more question on social at this moment from Facebook. Kelsey Storr asking, do you think we try and get a finesse speed back to change the pace of Fournette? Maybe a fullback that's more dynamic. I don't know. I mean, Tom Gohannon's pretty dynamic, in my opinion, right?
I scored a touchdown, right? A
couple. Receiving and rushing. Yeah. He can do it all. Touchdown, Tommy.
A finesse fullback, was that the question?
Of Fournette. Maybe a fullback that's more dynamic is the question.
Yeah, I think fullback is a spot where it's difficult to find, and it's particularly difficult to find in the draft to make immediate impact. So you would think Tommy Bohannon came in last year, got used to the system, gave him some things. Perhaps you sign a fullback free agency, have him on the practice squad, and try to develop that. It's really a developmental position because it's a hard position to play because, again, all these spread offenses, there's not many out there in college. So a finesse back, I think Corey Grant's their finesse guy.
That's what I think.
So I think if they're going to bring in a back, which I think is a possibility, as much as this team runs, with the way Corey Grant is using the offense, meaning he's a specialist player more than he is an every down guy. So do you need three sort of every down guys in addition to Corey Grant, meaning Yeldon, Fournette, and a replacement for Chris Ivory? I think you replace that Chris Ivory type with a low round guy or a free agent guy. Because if you're not looking for a stud running back, then you ought to be able to find a guy who can come in, can play, can start for a couple of games, give you what you need. You should be able to find that guy day three and beyond.
Jaguars.com Live, our final live show from the NFL Scouting Combine for 2018. Now let's go back to an Ozo question.
Okay.
And we'll get back to some live social questions here in just a moment. This is from Joe in Fleming Island. John, a thought on pass interference yardage. In basketball, they have the flagrant foul rule. With pass interference, a flagrant would be a spot foul, and a standard don't get his head around in time pass interference would be a 15-yarder. It would take judgment on the referee's part, but there has to be something better than the increasing number of game-altering calls that are happening. Now, this is a huge topic.
Sure.
Even this week around the combine.
Here. Yeah, I think that often what happens with these big rule changes, and this is a big one because it's a huge conceptual rule that is going to get a lot of kickback the first time it comes into play and changes the game after it's changed. So when you've got rules like that, they often take, much like replay in the 90s, they often take longer than fans would like to change because the competition committee and the minds that sort of mold these issues, they want to make sure that they're not changing the game too much too fast and letting it get away from them. So you're hearing talk about this topic. I don't think you're going to see a change this year, but there's so much talk about it that I think there's going to be something done at some point. And this idea, something within this idea, I think is what they're going to start experimenting with, mm-hmm. meaning you have the spot foul a certain number of yards downfield, but you have a way of having the referee judge whether did this defensive back intentionally tackle a receiver to keep him from getting a 65-yard touchdown, or was he trying to play the ball? If it's perceived that he was trying to play the ball, maybe it's less of a foul. Again, that sort of concept is tough for the competition committee to swallow.
Sure,
because the competition committee likes this is a black and white rule that enables us to officiate the same across the board. As an aside, the NFL prefers every game to be officiated with the same spirit, if you follow me. Well, because there's 15 different spirits, that's why they like rules and leave as little to interpretation as possible. They don't want a referee in Seattle having a dramatically different opinion of what a catch is than the referee in New York.
That's right.
They don't want a referee in Seattle with a dramatically different opinion of what interference is than this guy over here. It's hard to get all that, but most of their rules are geared toward having all the officials, every game officiated the same, so that it's an equitable situation across the board. So this is a tough one, but it's got to get done. And I think one or two more games in the playoffs where you've got these huge swaths of yards with interference.
Yeah, key times.
It's going to start getting as distasteful as the catch rule.
Well, in Joe's question there, if that scenario were to happen and A.J. Boye had the pass interference, it would only have been a 15-yard penalty instead of a, you know, down
by the same
field, 40
token,
yards.
You don't necessarily – the negative of that is – and right now, we're Jaguars guys, so we said, yeah, that should have been the rule.
But that would have been the result of that.
Right.
That's all I'm saying.
Right. But the negative of that is you don't want to get in a situation where coaches are able in that situation to coach AJ in that situation. Okay, you're 45 yards downfield. You see the ball coming. Let's push the guy out of bounds.
And you could teach a technique of not doing
it. Just push him because it's interference, which is what you've got with the force out rule if you think about it.
Yeah.
Now defensive backs are able, if a guy's catching it, they can flat out just push him out. Teams coach that. Defensive backs coaches would certainly coach, if you're beat 30 yards downfield, tackle. Because you're going to give up a touchdown as opposed to a 15-yard play. So that's what they're scared of.
Yeah, sure.
They don't want to see a situation where all of a sudden you've got 15 less 55-yard touchdowns on Deion's primetime show highlights because you've legislated this other rule. That's what they don't want to have to give up.
Social media questions, Facebook, the Jaguars Facebook page. We're live from the NFL Scouting Combine in Indianapolis, our final live show of the week and the weekend. This is from Skylar Chambers. If we don't sign Colvin, who would we be able to get to replace him?
Yeah, you know,
great question.
I think that is the – you can tell it's kind of befuddled because I did the old –
Oh, yeah. Well.
That's a befuddled look, JP.
You get that a lot.
I think that's why Colvin is such an interesting prospect in terms of trying to re-sign him, because you've got a situation where it's hard to find nickelbacks in the draft because you want a really good player there who can play. Well, what do most of your good cornerbacks do in college? They play outside.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't get a lot of film on these guys in college who have played nickel, because if you're any good and you're playing for Middle Tennessee State, you're playing outside. So they don't know if these guys can play nickel or not. So as a result, you're going in a situation where you're drafting a guy who's played outside and saying, okay, you're going to play nickel for us. And the great thing about Aaron Colvin, and he's great at this, is his field awareness. He's very good at knowing what's going on in back of him. He can blitz. He's got good feel for the game. All of those sort of sixth sense things you have to play that spot, they know Aaron has those. They're not going to know that a rookie has those because they haven't seen it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you don't re-sign Aaron and you don't have a rookie, then you're going to get a free agent. Well, if you're going to get a free agent, just go and sign Aaron.
Right.
So I think that's where you're in a little bit of a dilemma, because they consider the nickel a starting position. They consider it very important. They saw games last year where – Aaron Colvin's play in the middle of the field was a huge reason why they were giving up, instead of 210 yards passing, 150. He was making that sort of a difference. So I think that's why he's a more important player than maybe a lot of people observing would think. And they say, well, you can't give up A-Rob for Aaron Colvin. First of all, it's not a one-to-one situation like that. But that's why he's so important, because they don't want to see the defense without that element, and it's hard to find in the draft. So the answer to the question is, I don't know. It would probably be a rookie. They'd probably have to draft it high, and it would be a rookie who came in with a lot of uncertainty around him.
I mean, remember Aaron Colvin was going to be a first-round pick mm-hmm. when he came out and had the knee injury at the Senior Bowl, and we all know the story from there.
Depth plays into that too, JP,
yeah, sure.
As we talked about.
Yeah.
Boye Ramsey played 16 last year. That was great. If they don't, Colvin's on the level of ability. I don't think you necessarily want him starting 16 games on the outside, because obviously he wouldn't be Boye Ramsey because they start over him.
He could
at least get you to three or four games where you feel better than you would with anybody else on the roster.
Let's get one more social question in today, and we'll wrap it up here in Indianapolis. Matthew Johnston, are we drafting the tight end Hurst from South Carolina? I know you have insight.
Possible. Yeah, I mean, it's
from the bowl school in Jacksonville, of course.
He's a guy who makes sense. And the interesting thing about him, much like many of the tight ends, you might be drafting him in the first round, but you might be able to get him in the second round. There are four or five tight ends who sort of fit that, where a second or third round tight end in this draft because you're not going to be able to get – there are no complete top 15 tight ends in this draft. So you're usually looking for a pass catcher who's more of a one-dimensional player, so it's possible to get second or third round, I think, at that. So I think there's a pretty good possibility they draft him, and I say that with the idea that there's a 1/32nd possibility of all these guys. You don't know. Somebody goes ahead of
you. See if he's there, right.
If he gets drafted 25, then there's zero possibility, JP. Sure. But I certainly think he's a guy, if he is on the board when the Jaguars pick, I think he's going to get strong consideration.
All right, one final question.
One final question.
Yeah,
all
this
right.
is from
I'm
a guy,
befuddled again.
This is from a guy you know and love. We all know and love.
I probably don't love him.
Dave DeCandis.
Yeah.
Did you see that UCF guy do the bench press? 20 reps with one hand. Does Shaquem Griffin have a chance to play in the NFL?
Yeah. Everything you hear about him is he's a good player. I think he'll get a shot. But beyond seeing him, I just watched him lift 225 pounds 20 times. I can't do that, by the way. But, yeah, I think he's got a shot. I don't know much about his story beyond that. But from what you hear, he is a good college football player and has everything that you want. So I would think he gets a shot and we'll be in a camp somewhere and we'll see what happens.
Got to go prove it after that. For our coverage the next couple weeks, it's all about the A-Rob watch and the Aaron Colvin watch to see what happens with that. Free agency opens in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, I think we'll get the deadline for applying the tag is Tuesday at 4, I believe.
Okay.
My guess is that will come and go with
no
nothing
tag
from the Jaguars. Yeah. So at that point, you will have, I believe that's the 6th. The negotiation period opens the 12th. So you get that 6 days where, you know, I believe that anything that's got to get done with these guys, 90% chance if it's not done by the 12th, then they're going to get out there, especially the high-profile guys. This team has re-signed a couple of guys. I think Mercedes Lewis was a free agent that they re-signed once he hit the negotiating period. I think that was 2 years ago. It's tough, though, because if they get out there and bidding starts for these guys, it usually gets away to where the home team, there's no discount once the negotiating period starts.
That's right.
Is probably the best way to put it. So that's sort of your window. The 6th is the franchise. The 12th is the start of the negotiating. Then the 14th, which is the following Wednesday, is when it all opens up.
Well, that'll do it for our coverage here in Indianapolis. We'll look forward to the next couple of weeks of coverage here on Jaguars.com. Fun combine, John. Well done.
All right, buddy.
John Osier.
Look forward to seeing you back in Jacksonville.
Hey, we'll see you a little bit
later. I'll probably see you after the headphones
off. We'll see you after this. John Osier, Jaguars.com senior writer, Max Hochman, Dave DeCandis, Ashlyn Sullivan's back in the studio today. For our entire crew, this is JP Shadrick. Thank you for watching from Indianapolis, Jaguars.com live.